हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविर्विश्वावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 117, chapter 16, the Lord's opulence. Sri Krishna continued, As the Supreme Lord, I am the basis of the living entity, of the modes of nature, and of the Mahat-tattva. Thus I am everything, and nothing whatsoever can exist without me. Right, so the material energy itself, the living entity, and that combination, you know, which it has the opportunity for action, that's the Mahat-tattva. All that's Krishna, so that means there's nothing that's not Krishna. Right? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The meaning of the previous verse is particularized and summarized. Without the Lord and the Jiva, there is no conscious existence. Without the gunas and their causes, Mahatattva and Prakriti, there is no material existence. Right? Because you can have the Jiva and the Lord and have spiritual existence, but without the Mahatattva, you won't have material existence. Right, because the material existence is about the non-relationship or the indirect relationship between the living entity and the Lord. Right, so in other words, the living entity's relationship with the Lord's energies, but not including the Lord. Right, so then you have the Mahatattva to take care of that. And the spiritual world means the direct living, the relationship between the living entity and the Lord, where the primary aspect is that relationship. The secondary is supportive. Right? That's the spiritual world. Yeah. Without individual and collective jivas, sarvatmana, and all the individual coverings, sarvena, there is no combination of jivas with prakriti. Right? Because you have to have an individual, and they're covered, but you also have to have all living entities, because all of them have these aspects of covering. That's coming from the material energy. Yeah. Without me, all of this does not exist. So you can't have the whole material manifestation without Krishna, because there's the combination of the jiva, who's conscious, who actually does things, and the living entity, which is not conscious but actually controls. So all this is coming from Krishna. Right? Thus, I am everything, Krishna says. Sri Krishna continued, even though over a period of time I might count all the atoms of the universe, I could not count all of my opulences, which I manifest within innumerable universes. Right? So he could count all the atoms, but he couldn't count his opulences, because they're beyond. Because the influence of them and how all so many are working all at once. Right? Whatever power, beauty, fame, opulence, humility, renunciation, mental pleasure, fortune, strength, tolerance, or spiritual knowledge there may be is simply an expansion of my opulence. In this regard, Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Almighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all opulent and beautiful and glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. Bhagavad Gita 10:40-41. Sri Krishna continued, I have briefly described to you all my spiritual opulences, and also the extraordinary material features of my creation, which are perceived by the mind and defined in different ways according to circumstances. Right? So remember that Uddhava, then he had brought up that since Krishna is everything, how within that everything to see Krishna. you know, more specific. So then Krishna gave the vibhutis. Right? These are the prominent ones he's giving. There's unlimited. And so then within that, so then the extraordinary features, the outstanding ones, then with that, then Uddhava could meditate on that rather than each, you know, small little detail. Is that? Yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Lord summarizes everything. All the vibhutis in general and particular have been described, right? Because you have general ones and then you have specific ones. Like general, he's the taste in water, right? Or he's, you know, of horses, he's Uchashraiva, right? So that's specific. Right? But the vibhutis well known among people are identified through transformations of mind like affection and hatred. Those are not my vibhutis. Right? Because the point is the vibhuti is there, but people, their transformation, when they see something, and then by the vasanas, the impressions they have, then how they perceive it, with affection or not, or, you know, like this, that's not the opulence that Krishna is talking about. It's still his potency, but these aren't these vibhutis, because he's giving what's superior. Because these things, when you're dealing with lust, anger, greed, that's inferior. Like you see, Krishna's light, darkness is lack of light. So then you'll say darkness doesn't represent him. So it's his potency, but it's lack of light. It's still a potency. Like Lakshmi is a potency, Alakshmi is also a potency. But Alakshmi means just no Lakshmi. Right? So, yeah.
Can we say these ones which are subjective are not his vibhutis, but the ones which you mentioned earlier are objective?
Yeah, because they're based on Krishna and his thing. And these others, yes, subjective according to the jiva and how they because one opulence, one person will say is very great, another one will say it's not. You know, like let's say, you know, one may take someone like Caesar as great, but then a pacifist, he'll say he's not. You know, so all this kind of transformation, it's not based on that. Krishna's just saying that this is what it is. This is the objective element. Then from that you can apply in yourself, you know, how you perceive it. But Uddhava is asking how to see Krishna. Like that. If you want to see something other than Krishna, then that's already going on. We don't have to be trained in that. Right? So, these are not my vibhutis. Out of affection, a transformation of the mind, someone will designate others saying, this is my son, this is my father, this is my uncle, this is my nephew, this is my friend. Right? But the principle of sonness, that's Krishna. But this particular one that comes from transformation of the mind of attachment, that's not him. That's why Krishna says that simultaneously everything's him and not him. Because what's him? By following that, you'll attain Krishna. What's not him, by following that, you won't attain Krishna. Right? Even though it's all his potencies. Right? Because there's one path. If you're going towards Krishna, that will be the uplift. If you're going away, then that's not representative. These are not vibhutis of the Lord. Where there is hatred, another transformation of mind, one says, this person is offensive to me. This person should be offended. This person hates me. This person should be hated. This person kills. This person should be killed. Yeah. Pretty much covered it, right? These are not vibhutis of the Lord. Thus, though Indra is my vibhuti, if Sachi says, this is my husband, or if Aditi says, this is my son, if Jayanta says, this is my father, or Brihaspati says, this is my disciple, the demon says, this is our enemy, those are not vibhutis of the Lord. Right? In other words, the vibhuti itself and the principle of it, that's Krishna. But when you apply your own attachments to it, your own perception, then it's not acting in that way. It's only vibhuti when you see it in connection to the Lord. When you don't, it's just his material energy. So, make sense? Very important. So we see if something's connected to Krishna, it takes on those spiritual qualities. But if it's not, it doesn't. Yes? Yeah, you could say. Like that. It just means there's unlimited opulences. It means you have your six main, And from those six, everything else will expand.
Right? This famous Hindu saying that children are God.
Yes, yes. Yeah, defeated, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Do people still say that now? A little less. I remember back in the 80s, 70s, 80s, that was so common. Children of the God, you let them do what they like, you know. So, okay. I remember the kids were coming into the school, there was a small mango tree. And so their mangoes were green. Then the kids would pick it, and I'd say, no, you should tell your kid not to pick the mangoes. These are for the deities. He says, no, but they're God, so they're just picking. It's just for the, you said it's for the deities, so it's for them. Something like that. Yeah. We had to usher them out. To take your God and go. My devotees without possessiveness can say for all things, this is the Lord's vibhuti. However, the spiritual vibhutis may be thought of as son, brother, etc., without any harm. Right? So on the spiritual platform, then Balaram is there, he's an opulence of the Lord, but you can also say he's his brother or he's my friend. That doesn't have a problem because it's in connection with Krishna. In the spiritual world, you can have that sense of possessiveness. But in the material world, when you have that sense of possessiveness on this, from this transformation of the mind, means the material, then it doesn't carry the spiritual quality anymore. Right. So in other words, there's a process. It also then defeats the element that, oh, if it's all Krishna, then we can do whatever we like. No, as soon as you add your own subjectivity to it, it doesn't take on that nature of Krishna anymore. Right? Not that it's not, but you won't get any benefit. There'll be no spiritual benefit from it. There'll be no superior, there'll be no upliftment from it. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So Krishna, even in here, is then splitting and showing exactly what's him. Because we see this 11th canto is just showing exactly what's him, what's pure devotional service. Mm-hmm. Anything that's not, then is
yeah. They're only breaking controller and enjoyment.
Yes, yes. We're not the controller and enjoyer. But sad, but true. The avatars and devotees listed among the vibhutis can be treated in this way. Right? So then they're seen within this context, but it still works. Because they're connected to the Lord. They have a direct relationship. One should not take the meaning of the verse to be all these vibhutis are mere mental transformations, illusory. That's also then wrong. Right? Because that's the whole point of simultaneous one and difference. It can be one, but it can also be different. Right? That's the point of achintya. Because you say, how does that work? That's how it works. Mm-hmm. Among the vibhutis, Vasudeva and impersonal Brahman also are listed. Brahman and Vasudeva would then become imaginary entities. This would not be acceptable to... This would not... be acceptable to the Shunyavadis, and thus they would have to be excluded for the list. But then the word ete, all these would become meaningless in the verse. Right? Because their whole point is you can't have Brahman and Vasudeva being imaginary, because Brahman has to be real. Right? At the same time as they'll say Vasudeva is not real. You know, so they can't equate them. So then, right there, you'd have to take them from the list so that the verse wouldn't have any meaning. So for the verse to have its proper meaning, then you have to understand that this means in context of Krishna, then there, his vibhutis, if they're not in context, but with one's own speculation or attachments, you know, then it doesn't carry that potency. Sri Krishna continued, therefore, controlling your speaking, subdue the mind, conquer the life air, regulate the senses, and through purified intelligence, bring your rational faculties under control. In this way, you will never again fall into the path of material existence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, since all objects are my vibhutis, you should respect them all by words, mind, and body, and not denigrate them. This is repeated later. Okay, this is in the 12th canto. One should tolerate all insults and never disrespect a person who disrespects one. Taking shelter of one's devotional body, one should not create enmity with anyone. Right? Because he takes shelter of the spiritual body, meaning that I'm servant of Krishna. So the enmity that this person has is with the gross body. It's not with the subtle body. It's not with the soul. How can you have enmity with the soul? All the souls are transcendental, so you can't have that. So because of the person's external identity themselves, they're going to see that in connection with you. And so therefore then those kind of insults then aren't to be taken very seriously. You take shelter of the spiritual form, meaning that I am servant of Krishna. And so that's the form that's of value. That they can't insult. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole. So we see in 12th canto then it's getting up to now this behavior, how the Paramahamsa is acting. So if we see like this, that gets beyond. So this is something that may be there. But otherwise, then on the social things, then there's rules for these. If you want to say is no, but I have attachments, I identify, they insult me, I feel bad, then there's rules. You can't just make up your own. Does that make sense? So that's the fun part. You know, a few days back the conversation comes up as, oh, this is so elevated, I can't follow this. So therefore, what's the alternative? No rules. No, so you either follow this highest, or if you're going to take a lower one, you accept that and accept the rules that go with the lower. You know what I'm saying? So that's just how it works. Right? Because like a Brahmin, if he's insulted, he doesn't go to that place. Or where he might be insulted, he doesn't go to that place. Like, let's say someone's some relative died, and they're feeding all the devotees. It's just open for everybody. So now, by going there, they might serve prasad to you nicely, they might not. They might deal nicely, they might not. So because of that, it's not a specific invitation, the Brahma tend to not go. Right? Because they're doing this for the benefit of that departed, you know, person. And so if Brahmins are insulted, that would be bad for them, so they just don't go. But if they're specifically invited, they come here, you're a guest, they invite you and sit, you pay that special, proper attention, then they'll go to those programs. You understand? So there are rules. You know, it's not just, hey, lunch is free, and then we're going. Then fine, but then you have to understand, then you're not on that level. Then you take another level. Because for the general populace to go, it doesn't matter. Because it is a free meal. You know? Does that make sense? So you have to be able to, you can't pick and choose what you want.
Yes.
It's very specific.
But we need to know our level.
That's the point. So that's why one should be thoughtful. Again, then it comes back to, you know, being thought means the contemplation. One should be aware, one should know where one fits. And if one doesn't, means you're not thinking about that. Why aren't you thinking about that? We don't know that that's something to be thought about, then that's also a problem. Why isn't that known? You know, you should be able to describe where you fit into the Varnashram system, or where you don't fit, either you're above it or below it. These are the options. You're below Varnashram, you're fit within Varnashram, or you're above Varnashram, means you're transcendental. Right? If you're below, that means you're not qualified for it because there's not enough goodness to function within it. Right? And so that leaves you, you know, does that make sense? So you're either in passionate ignorance, so you're below, you're in goodness, so you function within, or you're transcendental in pure goodness, so you're above. You know?
But it is with the above.
Yeah, so in other words, Varnashram is the fence. People like to sit on the fence. That is the fence. One side is purely material, once the other side is purely spiritual. This is the one to get you from material to spiritual. So
it's interesting that the next chapter is Varnashram.
Yes.
It's Varnashram, yes. Yeah, because now you have to apply this. And because there's going to be, you have the Paramahamsa that acts beyond and doesn't fall within. And so then That's there. We see Sukadev Goswami and others, Dattatreya and this and that. But you see is that when they do function, when they do interact with people, then they function within. This is basic etiquette. So to apply, to function in society, then it is the only form. It's not that there's another form. It's just that it's always connected to Krishna for those who are transcendental. Right? So that's why the same set of rules can be, it's called varnashram, but it can either be asuric varnashram or daiva varnashram. Asuric means it's for materialism, and daiva means it's for pleasing Krishna's devotional service. But the rules aren't different. Manu's not, some will say, oh, Manu's describing this or that. No. He's describing, because it opens, how to know the Supreme Lord. Right? We know the rules of Varnashram, but how to see them in connection with the Lord, that's the question that opens. Then it's explained. So Manu then is the rules for Daiva Varnashram. But it's the same rules used by those who follow Asura. Surik. So in other words, there's only spiritual values and practices in that. Then you can also use them for just the material purpose. Right? Mother Jashoda, she cooks for Krishna. It's a purely spiritual activity. It's a manifestation of her love or her rati for Krishna. Right? But that technique of cooking could be used by a materialist who is not interested in pleasing cooking Krishna, but just likes the food. Does that make sense? Technically there is no such thing as material. It's just by material consciousness, we use it not for Krishna. That we call material. Sir? Something else? Yeah. Warsaw moment? Yes. It means you can use it nicely. You have to be appreciative of goodness and trying to get there, like that. But otherwise, even if you're not, but it regulates so that you do create goodness. Like in the morning, you get up at a certain time. You get up, you take your bath, you know, like that. You know, all those things. Right. So there's a regulation to it, and so that situates you in goodness. If it's just you get up whenever you want, however you want, do whatever you want, whether you get up and brush your teeth first, whether you have coffee in bed, you know, all these kinds of things, then that means you're not going to get out of the modes of nature. Right? So the idea is get to goodness, and then from goodness to pure goodness. Does that make sense? But you have to accept that that's what you're doing. If you identify with passion and ignorance, you're not worried about goodness, then that puts you outside of the system. Okay. Yeah? And, yeah. Okay. Control the intelligence, atmanam, by sattvic intelligence. You will not, again, be qualified for the path of samsara. Right? So if you control by pure intelligence, then you control the intelligence. And the intelligence then controls the mind. Then you will not be qualified for samsara. Right? It's not a bad thing. You won't be qualified for material life. You'll be qualified for spiritual life. Because when you're qualified for material life, you're not qualified for spiritual life. Right?
Can it be both?
It can't be both, yes. People try. Sri Krishna concluded, like, you know, as they would say, lying on the beach, or reclining on the beach in the Riviera, and drinking their pina colada while chanting their japa. Right? Because you have your japa in your right hand, your pina colada in your left hand, and then saying to their associate, this is the best of both worlds. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't work.
Only in the mind.
Yeah, only in the mind. In the mind it works fabulous, doesn't it? But somehow or another, in reality it doesn't. Because you know? In your mind you forgot you need an umbrella because it's too hot, so you can't sit out there. You know, so it just doesn't work, yeah.
In the future.
Yeah, in the future. Next time we'll get the umbrella. Yeah.
The mind is quite
you know, active to find any ways to avoid to surrender to Krishna.
Yes, well, that's the mental speculation that's mentioned.
Yes.
Means it's either looking to avoid Krishna or how to enjoy Krishna's energy. But that's the speculation, because like you said here, it didn't work out. And then he says, no, in the future, because
yes,
there's another plan.
Yes.
You know, okay, this part of the beach wasn't good, that part of the beach is good.
Yes, yes.
You know, or this time of day wasn't good, that time of day will be good. Or this season wasn't good, that season will be good.
Yes.
You know, too many tourists, you come at the other time. Oh, too boring, so like this.
Yes,
and then,
yes.
You know, and then you've tried that, and then that won't be good. And then it's got to be a whole different, you know, area altogether.
Yes.
You know, so it's just, yeah. So I said, yeah. It just keeps changing.
Yes.
So, whatever doesn't go right, if we're committed to the material, we'll think of another plan on how it could be good.
Yes.
But that's the demoniac nature. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. The suras, when they see the plan didn't work, surrender to Krishna.
Yes.
The asuras, when the plan didn't work, they just make a new plan.
Yes.
So they never surrender. So that's why you see the demigods, due to them being neophytes, may, you know, when Vritrasura comes out, they go out, you know, themselves and all this and all that. Then when they get defeated,
yes,
that they're, okay, we're not the supreme control, now they go take shelter of Krishna.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But they go and take shelter. That's the thing. They might start with that materialism, but they'll take shelter of Krishna. Well, the demons, no, they'll just make a new plan, regroup, and come back with some Sanjeevani or something like that, and then, you know, try again. Like that. So that's the whole thing, is that the mind, when it's not, doesn't have this inclination to surrender to Krishna, then it just keeps taking on this thing. If this didn't work, well, then this other thing will work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that this is not used in Krishna's service,
mm-hmm,
but this means is that you're just speculating for the point of the material benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the thing. Well, the spiritual, you're thinking, how does this all apply? How do you connect this to Krishna and all these kind of aspects? And you come up with your understanding that someone might point out something deeper.
Because
mm-hmm, the point is that it's the mentality that makes it devotion, not what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's already been pointing out, it's not speculative of what you do, it's already been recommended of what you do. Right? You know, it's just like, okay, it's about the devotion when you offer something to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then one could say, oh, then I could offer anything to Krishna. No, there's set things that are given.
Yes.
Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions.
Yes.
Right? So within those categories, that's recommended. That's given by Krishna. That's given by the acharyas.
Mm-hmm.
So we choose within that.
Yes. Yes.
You know? It's not that, you know, you're offering witchetty grubs to Krishna or something. That one doesn't go. You know, you can say no, but they're so big. You know, no, like that. Are you saying Pumbaa? Maybe, but not Krishna. Yes.
Can you a little bit more elaborate about this true intelligence? Because sometimes you can be very intelligent and you save on our own goals.
No, but intelligence is a mechanical thing. Pure intelligence means it's functioning on the spiritual platform. So it's about gaining Krishna's, favor. And that comes by devotion, not by the mechanistic aspects of the intelligence. So logic and all that is not what we're talking about. Logic it becomes satisfied by the performance of devotional service. But it's not that logic makes devotional service, or intelligence makes. Because real intelligence means to do something to please Krishna. Right? So it just furthers our own personal plans. Nice. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's pleasing Krishna. Right? So we could be making these plans within Varnashram, so at least it's pious. Right? Or we could be making them outside Varnashram, they're not pious. But the point is, it's when we connect things to Krishna. So since it's connected to Krishna, why we wouldn't use the Varnashram? Because we'll see, Krishna very emphatically points out, if you're not following Varnashram, it's not working very well. Right? Because, I mean, what are the flavors of the, you know, the current time? Community, right? Community and cooperation and all these things like that. That means varnashram. But the word varnashram won't be used. You can come back in 100 years, there still will not be community. And those who follow varnashram, they always have. They've always had. They had when we came to India. They still have today. Like that. You know what I'm saying? And even those who follow the general values of varnashram that they give, even though not the rules, they have community. But those who want to make up their own rules and everything, they never have community. They just don't. They may say they have, but they don't. Where's the relationships? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because it's not a structure. Varnashram means a code of how you function in relationships. So everyone is an individual, has a nature. We in our nature, how does our nature and another person's nature, how do they interact? What are our duties, our obligations, relate all these things? That's varnashram. It's just taken as a system, economic system, or a hierarchy of administration, of not even administration, management. Administration, then you have to know what's administration. Does that make sense? So, it's so far beyond that. Does that make sense? Is that we're good? Yes.
Can we say that the pure intelligence is then when the mentality of I'm enjoyer is changed?
Yeah. Pure intelligence is when, this is what Guru Sadhu and Shastra says, how to apply that into the situation I'm in. That's pure intelligence. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's where you start from. Then naturally from that, then I'm the servant, not the controller and enjoyer. So therefore, if I'm the servant, then I'll follow Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. If I'm the controller and enjoyer, why would I ever follow them? Right? Unless I'm smart enough to know that only through varnashram you're going to get anything good material anyway. Then I'll follow only to the point. Then I'll use Bhakti Mr. Karma. You know, or Bhakti Mr. Gyan, just enough to get what I want, and then that's it. Does that make sense? That's why we collect from the Hindus. Fundraising is from them because they follow it that much, and that therefore they have the money. And who's collecting from them? The ones that don't follow it, therefore they don't have the money. Does that make sense? It's just a matter of connecting the dots. The people who follow what's mentioned, even not connected to Krishna, they're the ones that have family and friends and money and community and relations and all that. And the people who say, oh, that's ancient, we don't do that, we do whatever we like, they're the ones that have a zero. That's it. You know, two or three fair weather friends isn't called a community. Right? Community means families that have relationships, not an individual. Whole families. You know, your family comes over to my house for dinner. We go over to your house for dinner. Right? So right there, you can just check out, I mean, just check off the list whatever we call community. Just on that one. My kid can eat at your house. Your kid could eat at my house. Another thing, check everything we have off the list. Because no, my fanatic food freak stuff is different from your fanatic food freak stuff. So you allow your kids to eat sugar, I don't. Or you allow your kids to eat packaged foods, I don't. Therefore, I don't let my kid to go to your house because you'll feed him stuff and you'll kill my kid. So therefore, you know. So we have to be realistic here. It means the approach is relationship. We take it that it's just a set of rules to control so that it makes it favorable for me to enjoy. And since each one's has a different idea, it won't happen. You know, you understand? Or if you do, then it'll be 1984. And who's going to do it? The pigs in suits in the animal farm. Right? You don't follow the life. Never heard of Animal Farm. Who was the guy?
Jojo.
He did both.
Yeah.
You never heard of the Orwellian universe? Well, pious. Take that as a good thing. Kafka? Okay. Finnegan's Wake?
Oh, that's bad.
That's bad. No?
No.
Finnegan's Wake?
No?
No?
From these three, this is the most unknown.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Okay, moving on.
Bhagavad Gita.
Sri Krishna concluded.
Bhagavad Gita, he knows.
Yes. Okay. Sri Krishna, in other words, if you use pure intelligence based on Guru Sadhu and Shastra, then you make yourself not qualified to be involved in material life.
Yes.
Then you're qualified for spiritual life, not material. Well, if you don't use it, then you'll be qualified for material life, not spiritual.
Yes.
So it's just a matter of what you want.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Sri Krishna concluded, a transcendentalist who does not completely control his words and mind by superior intelligence will find that his spiritual vows, austerities, and charity flow away just as water flows out of an unbaked clay pot. So that's the thing, is the body, the mind, they have to be controlled. Otherwise, you'll find all the spiritual benefit goes away. Being surrendered to me, one should control the speech, mind, and life air. And then, through loving devotional intelligence, one will completely fulfill the mission of life. Right? So we see here, loving devotional intelligence means the intelligence is applied how to do something that's pleasing to Krishna. Right? That's the whole free from karma and jnana. So this means it's that same verse of the Anyabhi Lashita Shunyam, but how that should be done in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Conclusion. Whatever opulence there may be, it is simply an expansion of Krishna's opulence. As the Supreme Lord is the basis of the living entity, of the modes of nature, and of the Mahatattva, thus he is everything, and nothing whatsoever can exist without him. Right? So then using that loving devotional intelligence, you see how everything's connected to him, and just apply it that way. Then you'll be situated on the transcendental platform. Hmm? 29 was 31, no?
31.
There's two more chapters after this. So you're wondering that why two chapters are left alone, so that they have a monster book themselves. Actually, there's one book for each chapter. No, it's very small. Just this ends the Uddhava Gita. Okay, so 17. Lord Krishna's description of the Varnashram system, right? Up next. 18. Description of Varnashram Dharma. Continuing. 19. The perfection of spiritual knowledge. 20. Pure devotional service surpasses knowledge and detachment. 21. Lord Krishna's explanation of the Vedic path. Right, so you see, it's also Narad Muni when he's explaining Varnashram to
Yudhishthira
Maharaj. Then you had a similar kind of thing. He explains the technicalities of it. Then he goes off into the acts, how you perfect yourself using this in Krishna's service.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. 20, okay. 22, enumeration of the elements of material creation. 23, the song of the Avanti Brahmana. 24, the philosophy of Shankya. 25, the three modes of nature and beyond, right? So you even get the Kapila Gita. like that. Yes. So this Gita has all the Gitas. Okay.
It also has Bhikshu Gita.
Bhikshu Gita.
Chapter
23.
Avanti Brahma.
Oh, the Bhikshu Gita. Okay.
Ayla Gita.
The Ayla Gita. That's the 20... Then three modes of material nature, 25, 26, the Ayla Gita. Who's Ayla?
Pururava.
Pururava. Oh, okay.
Continued from ninth canto.
From before.
It's kind of happy end at ninth canto, but here it's little.
Like he prayed to Vishnu and he got Urvasi and then...
Oh, and then after that. Then what happened? What happened the day after? The part that didn't make it to Hollywood, right? Yeah.
Made it to here.
Chapter 27, Lord Krishna's instructions on the process of deity worship. 28, Dhyana Yoga. 29, Bhakti Yoga. Okay, so then that ends these. The Uddhava Gita, yes. Chapter 17, Lord Krishna's description of the Varnashram system. Dialogue overview. Okay.
We don't get come up with the Sanskrit name yet.
Okay. Okay. 11th canto opens with Maharaj Parikit asking Srila Sukadeva Goswami how the Brahmins cursed the Vrishnis, who are always respectful and charitable, and whose minds were always fully absorbed in thought of Lord Krishna, right? So how could that happen? Right? Because that's always, you know, how can nice, good thing, bad things happen to good people, right? In answer, Sukadeva Goswami tells how the Lord decided to remove the Yadu dynasty in order to prevent the descendants from creating problems after his departure, and also to impress upon the conditioned souls that in the material world everything is temporary. So if even Krishna comes and his associates, they go, then you'll think, we all have to prepare for that, right? So it's that. Or we also saw, you know, other examples of, we were discussing yesterday, the Alwar Nala, Nila. Then he performed his pastimes and his associates, but before leaving, he sent them back to Godhead first. Because otherwise, if they stayed on their own, then people would get distracted from the actual point of devotional service. Next, Sukadeva Goswami narrates to Maharaj Parikit how Vasudeva asked Srila Narada Muni about those duties, which gave pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and led to liberation, right? So since everybody's got to go, then what is the process for liberation? And that's by pleasing the Lord, right? Narada Muni answered by describing the conversation between Maharaj Nimi and the Nadi Yogendras. Maharaj Nimi asked the exalted sons of Lord Rishabdev 9 questions. What is what the supreme good is? What are the natural symptoms of the devotees of the Lord? What Maya is? How to cross over her influence? What is the transcendental situation of the Supreme Lord? 6. How to perform karma yoga? 7. What are the pastimes of the Lord? Right? Because it means he's talking about crossing, so that karma yoga means it has to be about devotional using the actions in connection with devotional service. Right? What are the pastimes of the Lord? 8. Oh no, that was 7. 8. What is the destination of those who never worship the Lord? And 9. In what colors and forms does the Supreme Personality of Godhead appear in each of the different ages? And how is he worshipped in human society? Next, Sukadeva Goswami describes to Maharaj Parikit how the Lord told Uddhava about his departure and instructed him to give up all material attachments. Since such renunciation is most difficult to perform, Uddhava requested the Lord to instruct him how he can very easily carry out his instruction. Right? Because otherwise to do it just from the path of jnana, from just renunciation, will be very difficult. So he's asking, what's the process to come to this renounced platform, but in an easier way or more direct way? Quote, I identify with the blind well of the body, end quote, Uddhava said. Teach me how to give up that absorption, deliver me. Teach me first the actions and then teach about the knowledge. Besides your lordship, I do not see anyone who can actually explain perfect knowledge to me. Right? First the actions and then about the knowledge. Right? Because if we start with the knowledge, most people lose interest. So you start with the activities. Right? Like what you saw. You know. like how you say, if we had started with the knowledge about, say, like yesterday, mystic yogic city, right? That how this is useless, this, that, blah, it's boring. What does it mean? But we start off with the actual ones themselves, and we go, oh, wow, hey, that sounds good. I could use that one in Krishna's service and that. And then as Krishna described actually how it's, and then, oh, okay.
Yes. Right, yeah. Krishna is doing the same thing as Arjuna. First act and after.
Yes, yes. So karma yoga, then jnana yoga, yes. Then how to combine, because you have to combine them. It's not that there's one or the other. That will be attachment to karma, attachment to jnana. Using them together, which is the appropriate of each, that's then buddhi yoga. Right?
Action can only happen in a combination.
Yes, yes.
That's why Prabhupada terms the chakras. Karma in action.
Yes, yes. Action in Krishna bhakti. Yes, yes. Because it means when we're talking about action, that simply we're talking about the concept of it. Right? And then when we're talking about the jnana, we're talking about that kind of, but when you combine it, that's actually how you apply it. Because you have to apply with knowledge. Where you have to have the knowledge, you have to have the skill. Then it works. Right? Sri Krishna replied that an intelligent person, expert in observing the world around him, and applying sound logic, can achieve real benefit through his own intelligence. And thus, sometimes one acts as one's own instructing spiritual master, and can directly see him, or Krishna, along with all of his potencies. In order to illustrate this, the Lord narrated the story of Yadu Maharaj and the Avadhut Brahman. Right? So we see in this canto so many Avadhutas like that, because we're trying to get to the point of detachment. And then that's how they function in that, is because of the particular angle of Krishna consciousness that they're using. That's why then they naturally stay in that position. Right? Because they don't connect anything here. They only connect everything to Krishna. Right? Whatever's here, they connect to Krishna. They don't connect it to things that can do here. They just connect it to how it's useful in Krishna's service. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then from that, it brings them to, and so therefore, how much of this do they need? Very little. So therefore, then they are able to be detached. Okay, the Lord illustrated the story of the Avadhut Brahman who acquired knowledge by observing 24 gurus. The Lord explained that as long as the jiva is dependent on karma, he will fear the controller of karma, will be bewildered and a subject to lamentation. Therefore, the conclusion is that the jiva is to strive for freedom from the bondage of karma. Hearing this, Uddhava inquired, how is it possible that the soul can be freed from this material encirclement? How is he ever bound by material nature? How could he get free? At the same time, if he's liberated, how did he get bound in the first place? The Lord explains that on account of his infinitesimal nature, right, the 1/10,000th at the tip of the hair, right, the jiva falls into contact with material energy, which causes him to accept the covering designations of the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? So here, we are 1/10,000th at the tip of the hair. Only the spiritual world, then the soul actually has form.
Yes.
Right? Here, that form is covered by the gross and subtle body. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that different philosophies get all these things mixed up. Right? Yeah. But when he achieves the shelter of pure devotional service, he becomes designated as eternally liberated. One who has obtained pure devotional service always engages in worshiping the Lord. Thus he very easily goes to his abode. Having heard of the devotee who attains pure bhakti, Uddhava asked about the qualities of such a devotee. Right? So then how does one get to that place? And so then by applying this knowledge you've heard from the scriptures, like that, into the various situations you're in, even from your own body, you can learn how it applies, what is going from everything around you. You can learn from anything, because it's all connected to Krishna. Right? And so then understanding that he can be freed, then how is that done? But through the process of devotional service. Right? One who has obtained pure devotional service always engages in worshipping the Lord. Thus he very easily goes to Krishna's abode. Having heard of the devotee who attains pure bhakti, Uddhava asked about the qualities of such a devotee and about real devotional service. Right? Instead of mixed, it means what's real. It means the mixed is also there. It means it has real in it. But you don't call it, you know, as real as if there's nothing mixed. You know what I'm saying? You know, like juice in India. It's not real, meaning that there is some real juice in there, but there's a lot of water also. So he's asking, what about the nature of real juice? No water. Right? And why is there water in there?
For digestion purposes.
That's when she said for digestion purposes. That's when you do it at home. But when you go out on the street and there's water in it, do they care about your digestion? Money. Okay. So, why is it that we add water to the pure devotional process?
To get money.
Like that. We want profit. We want material benefit.
Digestion.
Yeah. So we're done that. Yeah, to digest. I can't digest pure devotional service. It's too difficult to digest. Add some water. Okay. It works from either angle. It's so perfect. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, good. I know I've always heard they add water to milk. But that was before when you got real milk. It's really hard to digest because it's so heavy. So they would put 25% water as the standard thing. When you cook, you'd use it straight. You know, you'd make kheer and stuff like that. But in drinking, they would always put a quart of water. But that was when 1 liter of milk made 250 grams of paneer. Like that. Now it makes, I don't know, what does it make?
It's 125.
120, 150, depending upon who your guy is. Like that. So it's getting less and less. So now you don't have to add the water. It already comes. You don't have to go to the trouble of adding water. It's already there. Like that. Okay. The Lord replied that the main quality of a devotee is that he's fully surrendered to Krishna. The devotee worships him with unalloyed love, then he considers him the best of devotees. Right? So he's fully surrendered and worships him with love. Right? Mm-hmm. These two qualities, these are the essential points. Because he's saying about all the qualities, the main quality is that surrender, because that means he's surrendered in devotion. Right? The devotee should surrender the spiritual master and by his mercy should destroy the samsara by the acts of knowledge. Then Uddhava asked how each, and remember in there is that Krishna said that if you surrender to him, he is controlled by the devotee. So that becomes the main quality of Krishna. Right? He reciprocates with the devotee and he becomes controlled by the devotee. Just as the devotee is surrendered to Krishna and he renders loving service. So these are the main quality that is there in the dynamic relationship between the living entity and the Lord. Okay. So this is the point that the whole canto is bringing out. But from the aspect is to get to that, you have to give up the material. Yes. So how to understand what's material and keep cutting it off bit by bit? Because otherwise we'll say it's practical, it's necessary, or it's realistic and all this. So Krishna's just here cutting it all off. Right? Then Uddhava asked how even one in knowledge can act just like an animal. In reply, the Lord narrated an ancient conversation between the Kumaras and Hamsa Avatar, where the sages, headed by Shanaka, ask how can a person who desires liberation destroy the mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Precisely the attachment to this mutual relationship causes one to act like an animal. Hamsa Avatar answered that both the sense objects and the mind are actually his energy, right? You can't separate them. You just have to take it through to Krishna, right? The mind and the senses are creating problem. You try to separate them, right? That won't work because they're Krishna's energies. You take those two and connect it to Krishna. That's what you're supposed to do, right? And so then what's the actual point? I mean, the practical point of that? That's devotional service. By seeing everything in connection with Krishna, one will naturally give up all material attachment. Uddhava next asked about grading the various spiritual paths, about which he has heard and will hear from Krishna. Having heard the Lord's reply establishing the absolute supremacy of devotional service, Uddhava then asked about the process by which one can attain mystic perfections in order to show that attachment from mystic cities is an obstacle. Right? So we've given up karma, but you also have to give up these subtle, the mystic cities. In answer, Krishna stated that he is the cause, the protector, and the master of all cities, of the yoga system, of jnana, dharma, and of Brahman. Thus all powers arise from the Lord. So there's nothing else to pursue other than service to the Lord. Having heard that, Uddhava became curious about the various material and spiritual places where the Lord exhibits his powers. He also asked for the perfections that great sages achieve by worshipping him with devotion. The Lord replied that whatever opulence there may be, it is simply an expansion of his opulence. A transcendentalist who does not completely understand this and fails to control his words and mind by superior intelligence will find that his spiritual vows, austerities, and charity flow away. So if we get attached to anything of this world or we deal in an improper way with it, we'll find that it affects our commitment to spiritual endeavor. It means the spiritual benefit you've gotten will not go away, but we'll get distracted. Right? So that's why we're very careful. We see a lot about, you know, anger and envy and jealousy and all these other things like that. Fault finding. These are things that are going to create problem. So those have to be given up. This point of judging good and bad and all that based on one's particular position. No, it has to be good and bad based on what's good for Krishna. Right? Yeah. One should control the speech, mind, and life air, and then through loving devotional intelligence, one will completely fulfill the mission of life. Thus, Lord Krishna has elaborately explained the process of jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, and astanga yoga. Now Krishna inquires how those inclined towards karma yoga can achieve the perfection of life, Krishna consciousness. Right? Because so he's described jnana, bhakti, and astanga. Now he's inquiring about how karma yoga works. So karma yoga means engaging varnashram. Because
yes.
That's where karma is. It is. That's where it's defined. Right? Pratigya. The system of four varnas and ashrams, which prescribes material and spiritual duties for the different members of society, appeared from the bodily limbs of the Lord. Right? So this varnashram system is coming from the Lord. It's not, so we'll say, oh, it's material. It's only if you don't use it connected to Krishna. You can say it's external, yes, but so is the gross and subtle body. So as long as one has to, either is attached to it or has to work with it because you don't have any other alternative, then varnashram is used. So we're not saying that varnashram is the highest pinnacle of devotional life, but we're just saying that's the system on which devotees interact and with each other. Like that. But it's the devotion, that's the highest point. Okay. Chapter 17 summarizes questions and answers. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna question 1124 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 17, 1 and 2 and 7, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, previously described the principles of devotional service that are to be practiced by followers of the Varnashram system and even ordinary unregulated human beings. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of the prescribed duties. Since you are the knower of all religious principles, please describe to me the human beings who may execute the path of loving service to you and how such service is to be rendered." Right? So that's the point, is devotional varnashram is simply how to regulate life in devotional service. And so how that devotional service now can be done to please Krishna, that's the point. So it's not just enough that you're regulating the life in devotional activities, but it's also how is that coming to the point of pleasing Krishna. Right? Sri Krishna answers this question from verse 9 in this chapter through verse 7 of chapter 19. Okay, so it's going to go over a few chapters. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.